At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This is the story of the one. As a maintenance supervisor at a manufacturing facility, he knows keeping the line up and running is a top priority. That's why he chooses Grainger. Because when a drive belt gets damaged, Grainger makes it easy to find the exact specs for the replacement product he needs. And next day delivery helps ensure he'll have everything in place and running like clockwork. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As head of maintenance at a concert hall, he knows the show must always go on. That's why he works behind the scenes, ensuring every light is working, the HVAC is humming, and his facility shines. With Grainger's supplies and solutions for every challenge he faces, plus 24/7 customer support, his venue never misses a beat. Call quickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Hidden Killers Week in Review.
A look back at the most prolific stories of the week.
This is the Hidden Killers Podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Brian Koberger.
It's one thing to commit an act so heinous the public turns away in disgust. It's another to do it with such calculation, such emotional vacancy that even your own father won't show up to your sentencing. That's where we are with Brian Koberger. According to reports, as the world watched his victims' families deliver some of the most precise and devastating victim impact statements ever seen. Today's episode, we're pulling back the emotional curtain, not on the crimes themselves, but on the strange, fractured world that now surrounds Koberger. The unspoken tension between parental love and moral disgust, the quiet communication reportedly still happening between Brian and his mother, and the looming question, what kind of relationship survives this? We've seen the kind of disconnect, or this kind of disconnect before, in high-profile killers, Lori Vallow with her delusional charm, Chris Watts with his empty stare. But Koberger, he's not charismatic. He's not seductive. He's not even remotely likable. He doesn't have the personality to win anyone over, let alone his cellmates. So when someone stays in his orbit, like his mother allegedly has, we have to ask, what is she seeing? What is he still getting out of it? And what kind of psychological toll does that take on a parent who's watching her son's humanity vanish in slow motion? Robin Dreek, retired FBI special agent and former chief of the counterintelligence behavioral analysis unit, is back with us to unpack all of this: how predators use familial bonds to maintain a sense of self, how parents rationalize continued contact, and what it really means when your son is no longer the person you raised, but a public symbol of monstrosity. Robin, let's start there. Koberger's father, as far as we know, didn't attend the sentencing. From a behavioral lens, what does that absence suggest?
You go to other wackadoos, yeah. You know, broken brain, you know, people like Lori de Belvallo behind bars who killed her kids. But She's got this element of crazy charisma behind her, that she can manipulate people and everything because she can become likable. She can endear herself because she's just a nutter, right? Mm-hmm. Koberger's not even likable to anyone by anyone. And so he can't even rely on his personality to get by, to at least make one ally. And so I don't see a good day for him coming. Ever.
No.
Thank God.
As far as we know, as far as I know, and tell me if you've found out anything different, Koberger's dad was not in, in the
That's what I heard too. I didn't get confirmation, but I heard it was just a mom and a sister there.
That's what I was understanding too. Again, I can't confirm it, but that's what I generally believe from what I've heard. What do you think that says? Dad, I mean, dad's the one who seemed to be the one that was, you know, reaching out. He would go drive with him back home, and he did it more than once. The last time was the last time he did it, but that wasn't a unique thing. He did try to basically be there for his son that he knew was a bit off. He's not there. I mean, for something like this, I don't think it's a, well, shoot, I have to work moment. I'm going to guess there was some meaning behind that.
I don't know if his meaning other than he himself, because, I mean, just think about the pain he's in. Just think about the pain that the family's in. And I like that they acknowledge that. I mean, I think, again, this is the 30,000 foot level we don't know behind the scenes, but, you know, you have a family, every family's been devastated by this one horrendous individual. Mm-hmm. And you got a dad who tried so hard to save his son, and ultimately he failed.
Yeah.
And he's now got to listen to, I mean, can you imagine sitting in that courtroom, listen to all these people say these things about your son? Mm-hmm. I don't think it was a statement. I think it was unbearable for him potentially. And the other thing that struck me that Koberger was actually communicating with his mother so much behind bars. You really start wondering, what are they communicating? Because I thought about that a lot. You know, what do you say to a son that who's admitted to doing these horrendous things? The only thing I could think of was, you know, what, again, you try your best to put yourself in a similar situation, as horrendous that is. And I think the only thing that you really can talk about is what you're going to do, mm-hmm. what your days are going to look like, how to deal with this kind of person, how to, I mean, you know, kind of like I, you know, we all do with our own kids, you know, as they're facing the challenges in life, kind mm-hmm. of dismiss the actions they took, because if you're going to choose to keep contact with your son, what are you going to talk about? You're going to talk about survival. That's it.
And I mean, I guess, I mean, it is very much a personal decision for them, but I don't know that I could, if I were in their shoes.
I don't know either.
I think I would be, you're done. I'm like, you're dead to me. I mean,
why it's really weird. The mother was in so much contact.
Yeah. That's what makes it weird. I mean, it's like, why, like, what are you're there for your little boy who did these horrible, horrendous things. And he's a monster. He can barely communicate as it is.
And he's really no longer who he was as your little boy. I mean, you know, the only, you know, stupid analogy I have in my head is, you know,
Chucky.
Star Wars. And now that, but I'm thinking Star Wars. I'm thinking little Anakin Skywalker all of a sudden turns into Darth Vader and he's dead to everyone. I mean, he's, you know, the person he was gone because he chose this dark path. And I think the same thing here.
Yeah.
You know, it's hard, it's horrendous to say, but to a family member, he's dead.
I don't know that it would, there's any benefit to the living to be in contact with Brian Koberger, even if it's your kid, your brother, whatever it may be. I don't see how that is a positive thing in anyone's life whatsoever. I would feel like they're dead. They are clearly not human, you know, not on a level that one could communicate with any benefit. I feel like you'd be feeding the monster in any way, shape, or form, giving him any sort of little bit of positivity in their day of allowing, you know, mom to talk to him. Like, I don't know. I mean, I would want to be waiting for him to die.
I think she's feeding the monster. I think you hit it right on the head, and that's a shame. Again, it's pure conjecture. We have no idea what they are talking about, but you feel for her, but don't feed that monster, man, because he's not your little boy.
I'm wondering how much those jail calls are similar to the ones of Stefan Stearns, the guy who killed Matty Soto. Those jailhouse calls are out there. We've played them before. And dad is a more pragmatic one, not necessarily getting into the emotions of it, but I think pretty much knowing his son is a monster, but mom is the one who seems a bit more in denial about the whole thing. I have no idea what those conversations are like now that he's admitted to all of these things and taken the plea. But, I do wonder, I don't know. There's a line, I think, at some point where it's like, I'll be there for you no matter what, not this. Not this. You slaughter four people and you have zero empathy or remorse about it. I mean,
and not just that. I mean, they're looking at him in the courtroom.
Yeah,
he didn't give a rat's ass.
No.
I mean, what do you as a parent? where do you even make the connection? I mean, I don't even – the hardest part for me to understand during this whole thing, believe it or not, was – and I'm not doubting it because Howard Bloom's got a great insight to this and other people have a great insight too. I have – because when you watch him in the courtroom, you have such a hard time imagining that what anyone thinks – is going to influence his choices. It's hard to imagine he's going to make a choice to make it easier on his parents because he doesn't seem to give a rat's ass.
Yeah.
That's, I mean, psychopaths don't care about others. I'm not doubting it if people are saying it and there's data points for him to support it. I still think he did it for himself. He thought, kind of like what we were saying before, I think he said, all right, I'm looking at the data. It's not looking good for me to get off. So the best thing I can do is, hey, let's create this new future for myself where I'm going to be this, I'm going to be studied, I'm going to write a book, I'm going to do all these great things, and I still have something to look forward to because I didn't care about the world anyway. And I think in my mind, but since he's all about him and the grandiosity, he decided to get the plea deal when offered to him again and probably pressed by defense because she knows she's losing. Mm-hmm. Less so than I did it for mom. I mean, does he look like the type of guy that you'd say, I did it for mom?
No.
See, that's what I mean? I mean, see, the data doesn't support it. I mean, he's me. Make my own future. Be in charge of what I think happens.
The only thing I can contemplate would be they're talking a lot. He is getting something out of mom's communication with him. And I'm wondering, you know, Howard contemplated that mom was in control for a while saying, don't take the plea. I'm wondering if mom eventually said, take the plea. And if you don't take the plea, I'm not going to be able to continue talking to you anymore. And I wonder if he saw that as like, that's his own, that's like the only little lifeline, the only human being on this planet who still has a inch of empathy for him. And even she was, I don't know, this is just my conjecture. I wonder if she's the one that drove it. And it wasn't in a way of, I'm going to take the plea to protect my mom, but mom maybe said, I'm going to withdraw any contact with you. And that was the carrot on the stick that made him do it. Cause that would be a me move. That would be a, well, that goes away. I mean, right. And maybe she just, you know, she knew, they all knew he did it. And
I can see that.
For the best, for the good of everyone, just take the plea. Just do it. Otherwise, you're going to get killed.
I'm going to differ on the language for the good of everyone. Yeah. He don't care about everyone. He's for the good of himself because I think you hit it right on the head there. So if the mother influenced it is because of the impact it was going to have on him about not having some sort of validation from the only person left on the entire planet until you get the friggin' groupies that are now going to want to talk to him is his mom. So yeah. And that's why she's feeding, like you said, she's feeding the beast.
Yeah. And that's
Spark where that beast.
Yeah. You got it.
That's right. Consolvus will take care of the entire thing.
Exactly. The wheels are already in motion.
They set it in motion. They can just sit back and watch a show at this point. That family, I tell you what, anyone that is if your needs, if any of them are unemployed at this point, I mean, who wouldn't hire them? I mean, those are doers. God. That's a family of doers.
Yeah. No kidding.
Problem solving doers.
I put a question out on our YouTube channel. Will Brian Koberger survive prison? If not, how long before prison justice takes him out? I just posted it like right as we began talking here. I haven't got any responses on it yet, but it'll be interesting to see what the general take is on all of that.
Yes, it will. Boy, that's going to – I thought, Tony, we were going to be done and over with this, but the Consolvus is really – they're not going to let it hang. I mean, you see families that are so traumatically impacted as victims – through these horrors, and I don't think I've ever seen anyone go on offense as much as this.
No, this is, you're on a mission. I'm on a mission from God to take you out.
They were not victims in that courtroom at all.
No, they definitely brought it. There's no guidebook for parenting a monster, no roadmap for navigating what to do when your child doesn't just fall through the cracks, but digs a hole through them. And yet, the Kobergers, at least one of them, still seem to be trying to make it work. We don't know exactly what's being said in those jail calls, but we know enough to ask, What's the cost of staying connected to someone who shows no remorse, no accountability, and no real acknowledgement of the damage he's done? Robin framed it perfectly. This isn't about maternal compassion. It's about survival. But whose? Because every phone call, every letter, every glimmer of human interaction is a drop of relevance in the bucket for Brian Koberger. He doesn't need a fan club. He just needs one person who still sees him as something more than a number. And right now, that person might be his mother. But there's a line between love and enablement, between support and supply, between holding space and feeding the monster. And as we discussed, if that lifeline was the only thing standing between him and a plea deal, if it was used as leverage to get him to face consequences, then maybe it served a purpose. But if not, if the calls are just another way for him to manipulate, to control, to pretend he still matters, then every moment of contact is another hit of oxygen for someone who should be grasping for air. Meanwhile, his victims' families, especially the Gonzalez, aren't just grieving. They're building barriers, social ones, psychological ones, cultural ones. They're making damn sure that Koberger doesn't become a curiosity, a study subject, a prison yard legend. They're cutting him off of any future glory. And maybe that's the real difference here. While Koberger's family might still be figuring out who he is, the rest of us already know. He's not Anakin. He's not Darth Vader. He's just another lost boy who chose to burn the world down and now wants company in the ashes. Tell me what your thoughts are in the comments section. Be sure to press subscribe on YouTube so you can do just that. Just to search us if you're not all there. If you're not there already, search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski, or check us out wherever you download podcasts, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever it may be. Search Hidden Killers with Tony Brewski there as well. Until next time, for all of us here at the Hidden Killers Podcast and True Crime Today, I'm Tony Brewski. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Brewski and the Hidden Killers Podcast.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.